Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to the Game podcast from The Times. I'm Alison Rudd. I'm back from my personal 2-week stage of the tour, cycling to Wimbledon and back every day. Not quite Alpe d'Huez, but hilly. This is the penultimate World Cup show. If you want the ultimate World Cup show, you'll have to wait until next week. Joining me in the studio is Julian Leron, and down the line, all the way from Rio, is Gab Morcotti. Gab, please update us on your life in the wondrous country of Brazil. Have you eaten any marvellous food or seen any great sights since you were last on the podcast?
I had a couple of really nice meals up in a neighbourhood called Santa Teresa, which is sort of the sort of a hippie bohemian type, or is supposed to be. It's kind of like the way Camden is or used to be in people's minds, I think.
Right. Well, the top news from Brazil is the injury to Neymar. A little nudge in the back from Zuniga, and we have a damaged vertebrae, and the star, number 10 of the tournament, is gone. I'm presuming in Brazil, Gab. I mean, there's almost like a feeling that a state of mourning. Is that still now? We're recording on Monday. Is that still the feeling? One of mourning?
I mean, certainly that was the case after the Colombia game. You had this sort of surreal situation where everybody sort of spilled out onto the streets and was celebrating. And then as news spread, you know, via Twitter, social networks, radio, that, you know, it was really bad because he was taken to hospital. And as news of the prognosis started to filter out via Twitter, social media, radio, television, carrier pigeon, you could feel the entire mood shifting.
And now, I mean, this is Monday evening, England time. Has the media and the feeling in Brazil shifted from this is terrible news to either find a silver lining, i.e. we can win it for Neymar and we can play with a sense of freedom because we're now the underdogs, or is there a sort of panic state still?
You know, Brazil have generally played like underdogs in this World Cup. You know, Luis Felipe Scolari is not, you know, the most progressive manager. They've just kind of focused on not screwing things up and waiting for Neymar to deliver a win. The tricky part now is that, you know, you're not just missing Neymar, you're also missing Thiago Silva, of course, who's their captain and, you know, arguably their best player. So, you know, that's a really tall order when, you know, you're taking on the Germans.
Yeah. Julian, I mean, Gab mentions Thiago Silva there. I mean, Brazil's reaction to that is to beg FIFA to let him play. I mean, presumably you were aghast at that, as I was.
Well, yeah, that won't happen anyway. Surely they can't rescind the yellow card. I mean, he committed 4 fouls so far in the tournament and got 2 yellow cards. So either it tells you a lot about how aggressive the Brazilian players have been, which is the case so far in the competition, or also how unlucky he's been. You know, 2 yellows for 4 fouls. The ratio is quite high. However, they will miss him almost as much as Neymar, in my opinion, a bit like what Gab was saying. He is arguably the best defender in the world. And I think David Luiz, without Thiago Silva, is not the same player at all, and he's more of a headless chicken, do you say in English? Without Thiago Silva, then with
Thiago Silva. How do you say it in French, just for the record?
We don't have it. The poulet sans tête.
Poulet sans tête. I like it.
Yeah, but I think the loss of Thiago Silva is massive as well.
Yeah, and Julian, do you agree with Gab that Brazil have been playing like underdogs from the beginning?
Yeah, and I like Gab's definition of Scolari's plan. You know, it's don't screw anything up, keep the shape, and then wait for Neymar to do something. It's exactly the same as Argentina. Just keep the shape up, don't make any mistakes, and just let Messi do the talking and do something special. And I think Argentina's World Cup so far and Brazil's World Cup so far are actually very similar.
Yeah, the big talking point away from Neymar from the quarterfinals has been Louis van Gaal bringing on a specialist goalkeeper in Tim Krul to deal with the penalties. My view is, why hasn't this happened more often? I've always said at big tournaments, if I was in charge of a national side, I would have a keeper who'd spend his whole time practicing penalties and bring him on when required. But for some reason, people seem to be aghast. Gab, were you aghast? Did you think this was peculiar management, or do you think it was highly sensible practice?
Well, first of all, I mean, this is something people have talked about, and you know, it's been done before. It's not like it's never been done at this level, but it's happened before, obviously, on multiple occasions. And Yimba, of course, won the African Champions League, both the semifinals and the final on penalties in 2003, I think. 2003, doing exactly that, you know, removing Vincent Inyama before the penalty kick sequence. So, you know, it's not a new thing. I do think that in this case, it's not like Tim Krul is a real specialist. I think it was more just something to go and mess with Costa Rica's heads. I think he's got two goalkeepers. I know Cillessen had never saved a penalty, but then he'd never really been in too many shootout situations. So I think he just kind of said, all right, I'll bring Krul in and we'll see what happens.
But Julian, I mean, you know, I got the impression that from what I've heard coming out of Brazil, that Tim Krul had been planning this. He'd spent quite a lot of time looking at footage of penalty takers, and that he was briefed that this might happen to him, and that he had a particular role to play. And this isn't some whim of a manager being quirky. This was fine tuning to the nth degree.
Yeah, I think it was the plan, because they even chose not to tell Cillessen before the game not to.
And you wouldn't, would you?
Yeah,
you
of course, of course. And you know, that's why he was quite angry at coming up, because he wanted to be there for the pens as well. I don't know. I know that in England you don't watch much of handball, but it's a big sport in France, and it's something that happens all the time. You bring a keeper just for a penalty. You can do as many subs as you want, so it's a bit different. But the idea is exactly the same. You've got one keeper that is specialised in saving penalty, and in handball he comes on every time there's a pen, and then comes out straight away to bring back the number one goalkeeper for the rest of the game, and on and off for pens. And I think that it's a very good idea for football as well.
And in handball, Julian, when they do that, is it part of their role to mind games, to point at their head and pretend that they know exactly what's going to happen, the way that Tim Krul was quite clearly trying to get under the skin of?
Yeah, a bit. And, you know, not that Costa Rica had many shots at Cillessen during the game, but it's also that, you know, those players have been used to have one goalkeeper in front of them during the whole 120 minutes, and then suddenly they've got someone else in front of them who is right into their faces, talks, says he knows where they're going to shoot, that he studied everything, blah, blah. And I think it's very unsettling, and it's exactly what happens.
Come on, he didn't really study everything. This whole, you know, of course it was planned in the sense that it was an option to him if he still had a sub left at this stage of the game, and, you know, and in that sense it was a psychological ploy. But this idea that, you know, oh, but he was prepared, he'd study these penalty takers. What we need to remember is that in a penalty shootout situation, you know, there simply isn't a large sample size that you can study people's tendencies.
I mean, I agree with you in that sense. Tim Krul wasn't going to be some sort of automaton, who like a computer program who could cope with anything put to him, because it's all he'd studied. But I think, you know, Costa Rica, the players who went up, if they were in any way believing that Tim Krul might have studied their previous shootout, if they believe that this was some very clever twist, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter whether Tim Krul had ever watched them at all before. All that matters is that they believed it.
Yeah, all that matters is that Hollander threw. You know, a better question might have been, Why did it take so long for them to beat Costa Rica? Probably because this is not a very good Dutch side, but it's a side where Funhaus squeezing as much as he can out of a really average to mediocre group of players, with a couple exceptions. But also, you know, look at the downside. You know, you bring on, you know, Cillessen had never saved a penalty. You bring on Krul, you know, you lose. Nobody's going to go and blame you for making a change in the penalties. And even if they do go and blame Funhaus, what does he care? He's going to go manage at Old Trafford in the biggest club in the world.
I'm Alison Rudd and you're listening to the Game World Cup podcast from The Times. It's the Panini sticker of the week. Who, if you had a completely empty album and you opened it and there was just one face staring out, who, after the past week's worth of football, would you want that person to be? For me, it would be Mats Hummels. I like a defender with an aura who doesn't seem to put too much into it, doesn't rely on athleticism, but is in the right place at the right time. And of course, he scored the crucial goal against France, which allows me to say, Julian, have your say.
Mine is Keylor Navas, the Costa Rica goalkeeper. Despite them, you know, losing to Holland, I just think he was probably the best goalkeeper for me of the competition. For someone who played for Levante and you know, Gab probably and a few other people, I've seen him play last season, but not many people knew him before the tournament. And I think that's what World Cup do. They reveal players like him who have great potential, great talent, but sometimes don't play in the biggest clubs in the world, or in Europe at least. And he's got, no doubt, a great future ahead of him in a much bigger club than Levante, I think. And that's why I give him my Panini Player of the Week.
I'm sure he'll be delighted to hear it.
I hope so.
Gab, who's your Panini sticker player?
Mine is Lionel Messi, because he's pretty good.
Yeah, we're laughing, but we're not really arguing. Now, generally, the feeling from the World Cup, it's not really a side issue, it's a crucial issue, but it's the quality of refereeing, or rather, what is it referees have been told to do? I think officially they've
Alison,
been told. Yeah. No, you're going to say it's not all about referees.
You're always
bring it
Alison,
back to referees.
You're always talking about referees. You're always so anti-referee. Seriously, can you ever put yourself in their shoes?
That's what I'm trying to do. It's very difficult. If you've spent a season doing referee in a particular way, and you go to the World Cup, which is your big moment as a referee, as well as it being the player's big moment, and you have a meeting, and you're told, hey, chaps, can you keep the cards in the pocket, please, and make it all about the football? And the upshot of that is what I consider to be the only bad game of the World Cup so far, which was Brazil-Colombia. I found it completely, totally unenjoyable. If I could have turned off without feeling guilty about it, I might have done. It was appalling. It wasn't even football. It was this awful stop, because the referee was giving every possible free kick he could give, but not bringing out any cards. So every single player who knew they could stop any attack by just some sort of niggly, nasty foul, and knew they weren't going to get punished. So there was just no football in that game. It was, for most of it, it was pretty revolting stuff. I know that's a harsh word, but I didn't enjoy it at all. Gab, do you not agree that the refereeing has created this slightly bizarre twist to some of the games?
I think the general directive that FIFA gives several directives to referees. A lot of them have to do with things like the diagonal movement and staying ahead of the play rather than behind the play. And there you get into all complicated, nerdy referee stuff, which most people probably don't enjoy, but which I'm sure Alison and Howard absolutely love. But one of the big things is they said, and this has been a push, you know, this isn't a new thing. This is something UEFA have been pushing, so the Premier League have been pushing, saying like, look, telling referees, you don't need cards to keep control. Try to do it through dialogue with the players, try it through.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Body language, facial expressions, all this stuff. Plenty of statistical evidence that shows that the fewer the cards out there, the more the goals. And we have had more goals and fewer cards. And the officiating's generally, with a few exceptions, been pretty good. And we haven't had nasty matches and mass brawls. The problem that they ran into in this game is they took a guy like Velasco, who's a very good referee, technically, in terms of he's very good at seeing what actually happens. But he is not a referee who really manages games well. He doesn't go and dialogue. If you compare him with a referee in the Argentina-Belgium game, who was basically spent half the time yakking with the players, he did the opposite. He is a referee who keeps control and discipline by issuing cards, by issuing a lot of cards, actually. And in this specific game, he didn't do that.
Julian, did you find that game uncomfortable to watch?
Yeah, it was, yeah, especially for James Rodriguez, calves and legs and ankles and all of that. I mean, you know, how Fernandinho didn't get a yellow card, at least, is still beyond me. I understand that the idea of not giving too many yellows and trying to control the game without giving cards, but, you know, cards is a sanction. If the player deserves a yellow card, then he deserves one, and the ref has to give one. Whether that's controlling the game or not controlling the game, well, that can spark, you know, brawl or whatever, or the player's not happy, I don't care. You know, I don't like this idea of try have a game without yellow cards. If a player needs one, he deserves it, and then you need to give it.
But Alison, you're the qualified referee here. They're not saying don't use your cards. They're saying, you know, only use cards when necessary. Try to maintain discipline in other ways. Isn't that what very good referees are supposed to do? Let the game flow, let it play, keep it fair, and only use cards as a last resort? Isn't that what you're taught?
Yeah, but you're also taught that every game has a different vibe and you have to decide pretty quickly as the official whether it's the sort of match that's going to benefit from you being seen as a disciplinarian early on and slapping a few cards out early. If you're a good referee, you will have interpreted the match correctly and that will work. You will then find the game flows because the players realise you're not going to fall for them. You know, fouling just enough, bad enough to stop the game, but not bad enough to get the card. And if you keep pushing and pushing and pushing the boundary, it's like parenting, you know. If you're not firm straight away, kids will push and push. They need boundaries and footballers need boundaries. And there were no boundaries in the Brazil-Colombia game. Time for the Roger Miller moment of the week. Roger Miller moment of the week is an unexpected moment of the week in the same way that the emergence of Roger Miller as a stunning talent at the Italian 90 World Cup took everyone by surprise. I found unexpected is that I just know when we come to do our team of the tournament, which we might do next week, producer, might we? Yeah. When we come to do our players, I know it'll be the first time ever, whenever doing a list, that I will want more than one goalkeeper in my team. It has been a World Cup of amazing goalkeeping, fascinating goalkeeping, all different types of goalkeepers, and I won't know who to pick. And so my Roger Miller moment of the week is that there's only one goalkeeper I have criticised, and that's Stipe Pletikosa of Croatia, who let his team down quite badly. But otherwise, he's the only goalkeeper who's made a few errors, and you could have said, oh, he should have done better there. Every other goalkeeper, I think, has just played out of their skin.
It's really interesting you make that point about goalkeepers, because I would have said that actually Igor Akinfeev, who cost your pal Fabio Capello place in the second round, was awful. Iker Casillas was very poor as well.
I won this
Vincent
goal.
Enyama. But interestingly, our cousins at the Wall Street Journal have a fascinating thing where they sat down with Jorge Campos, and he actually made the point that this has been the World Cup of very good goalkeeping and very bad goalkeeping. And he highlighted something like 45 goals in this World Cup that a goalkeeper should have kept out, or that at least he would have kept out. But anyway, if you're asking me the best goalkeeper in the tournament, thus far, and I hope it changes after he lets in four or five goals against Brazil, is Manuel Neuer.
Yeah, no, I will add one of him in my team as well. But what's away from goalkeeping, what's been your startling revelation of the week, Gav?
Perhaps unimaginatively, but is the fact that Costa Rica managed to hang in there for so long against Holland. I know Holland hit the woodwork and whatnot, but the fact that Holland remain in this tournament, I think, is just incredible when you look at, you know, the complete and utter lack of ability.
Julian, your Miller moment, please.
My Miller moment of the week is to see Martin De Michelis actually playing at the World Cup. The Martin De Michelis that we've seen all season giving away stupid penalties and making mistakes for Manchester City played in the World Cup quarterfinal and probably playing the semi-final and probably playing the final if they reach it. 33, he hadn't played for Argentina for 3 years. Even he was surprised to be in the list of 30 before the World Cup, even more in the 23. And now he's playing. It's incredible.
Yeah, I agree. He did look kind of pleased to be there, didn't he?
He was just like crazy.
I'm Alison Rudd and you're listening to the Game World Cup podcast from The Times. Right, we've got Julian in the studio and he doesn't want to, but he's going to have to. What is the autopsy on the French defeat to Germany, Julian?
It's still positive overall.
Really? You know,
yeah, it was a good World Cup. Not that we've played and beaten many amazing teams and amazing players. However, compared to 4 years ago and 2 years ago at the Euros, it was still a progress. You know, Deschamps and the players, I think, did a good job. They were a bit nervous, I think, against Germany. The lack of experience was quite obvious. There was the starting 11 for Germany had played 75 more World Cup games than the starting 11 for France before kickoff, which I think is massive. It's the biggest gap ever between two teams at the World Cup in terms of experience. And I think you saw that through the game. However, they gave it a go. There's still a lot to learn from this World Cup, a lot of positives as well, taking the team to 2016 and the Euros in France, where I think we'll be contenders.
What were the sort of headlines the next day in France?
He was, because the baccalauréat, which is the French A-levels, just finished, and the result were that L'Équipe went for out, but with a good mention, because in France, when you do your A-levels, if you've reach a certain note out of 20, you get different mentions, so it's very good, okay, and or nothing, basically. So that was the idea behind for L'Équipe. For Le Parisien, my newspaper, we said thank you despite the defeats. And overall, it was still quite positive. I think, you know, don't forget where we came from 4 years ago. And there was still a lot of good things through this tournament. It's a very young team with Varane and Pogba and Griezmann, kids like that, who will learn a lot from it. And I think, yeah, overall, it's good. The momentum will carry, hopefully, for 2016. And yeah, we were quite happy.
I'm surprised. Was there not a lot of pain because it was Germany?
There was. There will always be. And there was that feeling before I felt in France that we sort of knew it would end up like that anyway. I don't think anyone really believed that this time would be different. Mostly, I think, because of what happened in the past and 82 and 86, but also because it was too early. This game came too early for us, for the team, I think. We were not ready. They were much more ready than us. And I think that was the difference.
Gab, Germany, Brazil, first of all, can you sort of briefly bullet point what the key points for that final are, that semi-final are for us?
One of the big things for Jurgen Löw is, do I restore Philipp Lahm to midfield, which is where he played in the group stage? And that means putting Per Mertesacker in central defence and perhaps having a slightly clunkier back four. You know, a guy who can really dictate the tempo in midfield. Or do I leave him at right back, move Jerome Boateng inside alongside Mats Hummels, so Hummels is a lot more comfortable, and leave Per Mertesacker to prop up the bench? I don't quite know what he's going to do against a Brazil without Neymar. You know, you might think that maybe you could go with the four center backs. From Brazil's perspective, I think the key is, do you replace Neymar with another attacking player, or do you replace him with another one of the goons in midfield?
And a very brief, in a nutshell, Argentina-Holland, what's the crucial thing, Julian?
Oh, the crucial thing is like I've said, I think this Holland team lacks a lot of quality. However, they're probably good enough to try to keep Messi quiet. And again, that would be the key. If they keep Messi quiet, they will do quite a lot of the job. Di Maria is out, which is a massive blow. Aguero could come back, but he wouldn't be 100% fit anyway. So it's a weakened Argentinian side overall. However, they still have far too much quality, especially in the way they play. Unless Van Gaal comes out with some sort of special tactical plan, which he is able to do, obviously, and try to prevent them from playing, which is probably the idea, and try to hit them on the counter with Schneider, Robin and Van Persie.
I think Van Gaal will probably make three substitutions before the 17th minute and completely do the nut of Argentina with some sort of tactical cleverness. Gab, before we go, is there anything happening other than Neymar blubbing in Brazil that we should know about?
Well, it's a funny story with the Dutch.
It's going to be a funny story with a duck. Okay, yeah, go on.
Now, so most normal countries, when they go to a World Cup, FIFA have a list of possible training camps, or they can go and pick their own or even build their own in Germany's case. And generally, these are places, you know, in the countryside, outside of cities, where, you know, there's a peace and quiet, country hotel, playing fields, and so on. Holland, of course, has to be different. So they decided they want to train right in the middle of the south zone of Rio, sandwiched in between Copacabana, Ipanema, and Leblon is this area where is Flamengo's old training ground. They decide, no, we're going to train here. And that means, and we're going to stay at a hotel in Ipanema right on the beach, which is, you know, a place that's filled with tourists and so on. Now, nobody was expecting that. And as a result, what's happened is because this is really a tourist hotel, it's not, you know, a training camp hotel, they were only able to book that hotel through to the end of the quarterfinal stage. And now they have to leave their hotel. So now it's going to be taken over by sponsors, FIFA types, and the sort of corporates, the sort of people who fly in for big events. And, you know, they're all crying and moaning and talking about, see, look, they're putting the sponsors ahead of the players. But in the reality is, if they hadn't decided to be so weird and unconventional and so Dutch and saying, like, no, let's go and stay in the beach amidst all the tourists, they wouldn't have had this problem. And obviously, they knew ahead of time that they were facing this. And besides, there's a bazillion vacated training camps from all the teams that have gone home that, you know, they could have gone and used. Heck, they could have moved to the England hotel, yeah, in San Conrado, which, of course, you know, is available.
Indeed it is. Thank you for listening to the Game podcast from The Times. Many, many thanks to my guests, Julian Laron and Gab Marcotti. Make sure you press that subscribe button on iTunes so you don't miss out anymore. Next week's show is the last in our World Cup series. It's the ultimate one, actually. Read all the latest news from Brazil from The Times online and in print. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Tim Montgomery, the presenter of another Times podcast from the opinion pages called Did You Read? It's the perfect weekly snapshot of some of the best writing in the newspaper. Find out more by heading to thetimes.co.uk/commentcentral and search Did You Read to subscribe on iTunes.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere.
acast.com.